Mongrel by Nick Petru. Before I get into this, you have to understand that I love dogs as much as the next guy. It's just, God, I can't sleep. I can't breathe. And so far, no combination of earplugs and noise-cancelling headphones and pills has made it go away, or even taken the edge off. I got Lucy from the pound on the way back from the pet store. The living teddy bears toddling through the shredded paper were, of course, adorable. But I was a student, and I choked on air when the store lady told me how much they cost. I said I'd left my phone in the car and had to ask my girlfriend. I got into my hail-dented RAV4 and drove off. Roadworks sent me on a detour past the pound. I chalked it up to fate and made a U-turn. Most of the dogs were old, broken things. They barely turned their bloodshot eyes to face me. A blue heeler stood on three legs. A pink burn scar covered half the face of what might have been a dingo. The place stunk of slobbery dog bowls and palpable stress. The cement floor drew the heat from my bones. I regretted the U-turn and was about to leave when I noticed a black and white blur bouncing up and down the door of its cage, yipping for me to bring it home. Its energy attracted me. So did its name. Lucy was 10 months old, neutered, and chipped. She squirmed and scratched as I carried her out of the pound. Still, I shrieked with joy as she jumped all over my seats and dashboard on the drive home. "Oh, you're a little mountain goat," I said. "We're going to have so much fun." And for those first years, we did. Lucy was a mongrel, mostly fox terrier, a Jack Russell snout, maybe some fruit bat. Her energy was infinite, but she hated being cuddled. She was always stiff in that way, wooden. Our best days together were spent exploring the limestone tracks that weave through the Banksia woodland out the back of my forever a construction site suburb. I didn't train her. I guess I paid the price for that. I bought her an expensive kennel, but she weaseled her way out into sleeping in the laundry at night, then the living room, then my bedroom. It was a rental. I couldn't install a doggy door. When she needed to go wee-wees, I'd have to wake up, drunkenly take her out, and wait. I was patient, to begin with. Then she started doing laps around her tiny lawn patch every time, sniffing, sniffing, squeezing out a trickle of piss, then tottering back inside with a wagging tail. When her fur started to fade, she would waddle in circles on the lawn for 5-10 minutes, squirting out dollops of caramel that made me gag. Lucy had never done well with loud noises, but thunder hadn't bothered her in her first decades as much as it did in her second. Coastal storms, something I used to look forward to, now had me running around the house, shutting every window and door and ripping out strands of my own hair. I'd play music and leave the TV on to drown out the thunder. I'd sit by her bed. I'd stroke her trembling frame and hush her in the way I might hush a baby. Or someone I was about to kill. None of it worked. She knew when a storm was coming, could smell the ozone, and she kept me up for more nights than I can remember. They've blurred together. My heart skipped whenever I heard her clop, clop, clopping over my floorboards to my bedside, where she'd vibrate until the thunder passed or the sun came up and I went to work. She got aggressive with other dogs too. I scooped her up before she could get to most of them, always twice her size, of course. But this one mangy poodle was too quick. Or maybe I didn't run as fast as I could have. The poodle ripped Lucy's belly open. My white shirt turned red on the drive to the vet. After they'd stitched her up and attached the dreaded cone, I gave her more time than I had in years. I even dragged the mattress from my bed so we could share it on the floor. When she needed to go wee-wees, I stood on the back lawn while she went, and told her how much of a good girl she was while she walked back inside, cone clipping the doorframe. My new attitude lasted for maybe a week after the cone came off. That coincided with a summer thunderstorm that blacked out half the northern suburbs. I was rummaging through the closet under my staircase for an electric lantern when Lucy squeezed through my shins and buried herself right in the back corner, where she whimpered and drooled. Jesus Christ, her drool stunk. Finding the lantern, I wanted to get back to my book, but Lucy wouldn't come out. At first, I used the too soft, too loving voice that, by that point, we both knew for treachery. Then I growled for her to come, to get on her bed. Her trembling became violent. I got down on my knees and reached through the chair legs and suitcases and plastic tubs to take her by the scruff of her neck, but seized only a lump of loose fur. Reversing out, I smacked my skull on the base of a chair and pressed my knee onto a block of Lego. Why? I shrieked. As if in answer, Lucy issued a burst of high-pitched whimpers. Why can't you just be fucking normal? I hate you. I hate you. They say dogs always forgive you, that their anger lasts until dinner time. It had been like that with Lucy up until that night, but after it, she sulked about like we were a fighting couple. Her eyes swelled out of her skull in those later years. Whenever I went into the living room and found her lying on her side on the carpet, I would catch just the whites of them. She refused to look at me. It went on like that for months, giving each other the bare minimum. Her walks were up the road to Coles and back, her turds piled up, I locked her outside more, I wore headphones to dull the squeaking of her nails down the sliding door. I had to bring her in at night though, her yipping became so bad that several of my neighbours complained, once to the cops. I even wore earplugs to bed and just let her piss on the rug. What you have to understand is that this went on for all the best years of my life. I was in my early 20s when I got her. She stained the latter half of that decade and all of my 30s. It might sound like an excuse, but those restless nights ruined me. I kept my job, and that was all. I went bald, the nail in the coffin for my social life. I couldn't bring girls home. What would they say when they smelt the drool? What would they say when the morning sunlight exposed the stiff white hairs that clung to every square inch of the floorboards? I couldn't leave the unit for long, not even for a weekend trip down south. Which family member did I hate enough to dump Lucy on? And that was what it came down to. Soon even Mum and Dad couldn't bear her anymore. My only solace was the pink lump growing on Lucy's elbow. Even that let me down. I watched it grow through her 17th year, 18th year, 19th. I dreamed about it poisoning her blood and claiming her. I dreamed about tossing her bed and her favourite red blanket into a fire. How tall it burned. My dreams now, though, there's something else. Not dreams at all. There was, however, a period of mutual understanding I can't ignore. I'll give her that at least. I'd come back drunk from Mum's 60th to find Lucy lying on her belly on the lawn, looking up at the stars. I hadn't seen her that peaceful, God, that quiet, in years. It was how she used to look at me as she pranced back through the twilight murk of the Banksias after a long walkies, as if to say, thank you for a wonderful day. I hadn't sobbed like that since I was a boy. Her cloudy eyes reflected galaxies. I curled up beside her and stroked her until we were ready for bed. I was gentle with her in those final months, and she with me. We watched a thunderstorm eat the beach through the windshield of my car, not a whimper, not a word. Maybe she was completely deaf by then. Maybe she just didn't have anything to be afraid of anymore. She knew the end was near, and I envied how well she'd come to terms with it. If only our peace could have lasted. If she died seeing me like that, knowing me like that, maybe she wouldn't have had any reason to come back. In her very last month, when her every breath rattled, she became as bitter as any human can. She'd wanted to go peacefully, the stars in her eyes, the moon, but something wouldn't let her. Something anchored Lucy to her rotting body. And maybe she thought that something was me. she lingered and slept most nights in her piss, if she slept at all. She didn't clop up to my bedside anymore. She just lay there, growled sometimes. I swear she would bark me awake if I snored too loud. Now I was disturbing her. I tried to pet her one time and she nipped me with her crooked yellow teeth. The wound got infected. My pinky finger swelled to twice its size. I'd raised my hand to smack her right after it happened, but her blind eyes locked on mine, and I shrunk. I didn't watch the vet put her to sleep. He used the word sleep, at least. It was what he didn't say, how he twiddled his pen and couldn't keep his feet still, that told me how bad it had really gone. Bad. The dog had died bad. Scratched and squirmed, choked on her terrible drool. I see this with more clarity than any memory of her, the mind its own worst enemy. I'm not sure that everything that's happened to me is in my mind, though. It began just after I'd started to forget about Lucy, after I'd thrown out all her things and had the unit deep cleaned. It began, I think, the night after my first truly good sleep, after I'd convinced myself it was finally over, and started to think about how a well-sculpted beard might complement my bald head, and how the ocean might look from the red boulders down south in winter. The lightning. I had been dreaming about nothing, when the smell of her drool seeped down my nostrils and woke me in a sweat. I had been alone in my room, when her clop, clop, clopping echoed through the dark. The end. Hello, kids. Welcome to episode 5 of Spinning Yarns with Nick and Paddy, a podcast created by my writing partner Nick Petru and I, Patrick McCarthy, where we'll be immersing ourselves in the world of the written word and attempting to be as entertaining and as smart-ass as possible. Before we commence, we'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet, the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation, and pay respects to their continuing culture and the contribution they make to the life of this city and this region and their leaders, past, present, and emerging. How the fuck are you, Nick?
Fucking tired, man.
Same, eh? Damn. Pretty tired, brother.
Yeah, mastering episode 1 still, and I don't know anything about audio, so I'm learning as I go. I've picked up a lot, but today was a fucking grind. Like, All I can see are the waveforms of Audacity at the moment. Like, when I shut my eyes, they're stained into my fucking brain.
Mm.
But cheers.
Oh, cheers, man. Yeah, for sure. I'm glad I'm free of it because I don't have to do any of the sound.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm great. Thank you for that. Appreciate that. It's a massive weight off my shoulders anyway. So the story, Mongrel, that was messed up, but also quite emotionally honest, which I think was probably the biggest takeaway I have from that story. I don't know if it was based on a real instance of you owning a dog that was decrepit and that you stopped loving, but putting yourself in the mind of that protagonist, I thought showed quite a great deal of like alacrity and sincerity. Which, yeah, you know, most stories about doggies, like they're like, oh, I love my doggie, it's so perfect, so beautiful. But like, you know, to deal with it in that kind of vein, I thought was quite, it was very, very interesting and compelling.
Mm. Thanks, man. It does come from my own life, actually. It was my parents' dog and she carked it probably about a year ago now, maybe a little less. And was very highly strung since we got her. Had a lot of lovely moments together, no doubt. But there were also some tense ones where she'd keep me up all night, or like I couldn't leave the house because I need to be home to look after her or whatever it was. And I obviously don't feel the same way that the protagonist would have felt about his dog. But there were some emotions there that were in the same vein that I just kind of extrapolated and made them more intense.
For sure. You can like take them to the logical end point or maybe to an extreme to convey something properly. Yeah. And I guess like, you know, her growing decrepitude would have been like really, really painful.
Yeah, right? It is because, you know, it happens so much faster in dogs than it does with humans. So I don't know. You can just kind of see it easier. But you see that progression. yeah, there was like a sweet point when she was like at a young age and I was younger, so I had the energy to deal with it. But then you get older and stuff like that, and she's getting older and still was just as anxious all the time. Yeah. Bit of pain there, actually, now that I look back on it. I still have nightmares and dreams about her. I'm noticing actually a recurring theme is in my stories. I'm drawing a lot from dreams. I didn't realize I'd been doing that quite so much. But anyway, I keep having recurring dreams and nightmares about her where I'm just like with my family and she's just there and it's just matter of fact. I don't think anything of it. And there are other ones where like I'll see her in the dream and I'll know that in like reality, like she's dead or something like that. So I'm like, you're supposed to be dead. And I'm looking at her and it's just, I don't know. It's terrifying. I'm stumbling over my words because I'm actually getting a little bit emotional about this.
No, I mean, it's a very surreal experience, man. I also have those, I guess like nighttime visitations from people I've lost, you know, and it, you know, they sort of say like dreams are a storytelling playbook, you know. It's really, I think it's a great thing to draw inspiration from them.
Yeah.
Especially when they hit you in such a visceral, cerebral sort of way.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, anyway, I very much appreciated reading that out.
I was pretty impressed with that narration, actually. You did a good job.
Hear that, readers? Listeners?
I thought we said we weren't going to blow smoke up each other's asses.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, in this episode's segment of Stories We Love, we're going to talk about Bob Dylan. All is gone, all is gone, admit it, take flight. I gagged in contradiction, tears blinding my sight. My mind, it was mangled, I ran into the night, leaving all of love's ashes behind me. My dad showed me Bob Dylan's... Ew. I did actually see my dad's dick once when I was getting up to go to the toilet and I heard a noise in the kitchen and my dad was getting a glass of water and he was wearing a t-shirt and his dick was just hanging down like, he was just like,
what, he wasn't wearing pads?
Nah, I think he'd just been fucking finished a session of pumping my mum.
Oh, fuck, man. That's making the cut. That's just been
smashing Franny.
Jesus.
I'm going to start the whole thing again.
Nah.
Yeah, because it's just so annoying.
Right? I'm
keeping it. No, yeah, for sure, but I'm just going to start the thing again. In this episode's segment of Stories We Love, we're going to talk about Bob Dylan. All is gone, all is gone, admit it, take flight. I gagged in contradiction, tears blinding my sight. My mind, it was mangled, I ran into the night, leaving all of love's ashes behind me. My dad showed me Bob Dylan's music when I was very young, and he was right too. I'm approaching 30 and loving every moment, no less because Dylan's writing continues to accompany me on my path and only grows in depth and power each passing day. Writing about, talking about, effusively praising this man is nothing new. He's 80 years old, has sold over 100 million records, rewrote the rules on pop music, had a massive impact on the public perception of the USA's fallen military policies, became a messianic figure for the burgeoning and iconic counterculture, altered his mode of expression countless times, won every available award from Oscar to Nobel Prize for Literature, and is widely touted as perhaps the greatest writer of songs and ballads since the poetic traditions of Homer, Ovid, and Virgil. One could say that discussing Bob Dylan is, as my dad would say, old hat. But seeing as this podcast is primarily concerned with storytelling, and Dylan is a storyteller, we feel like his artistry warrants a mention. The wind knocks my window, the room it is wet. The words to say I'm sorry I haven't found yet. I think of her often, and hope whoever she's met will be fully aware of how precious she is. The lyrics interspersing this segment are from his Ballad in Plain D, the 10th and longest track from the 1964 album Another Side of Bob Dylan. It deals poetically with the dissolution of a once romantic but eventually tumultuous relationship, and does so with a complex beauty the renowned lyricist has at this point completely trademarked. For Dylan, love is certainly pain, and poetry his exorcism of such pain. In recent years, he has re-examined said song as one he regrets writing, understandable when the growth and maturity of his work is another acclaimed facet of the man. But personally, the words ring out with such insight and emotional intelligence that I'd wager they encapsulate the artist more than many of the most famous songs that made him a legend. The consistent, reliable, driving rhyme scheme gives the song an enjoyable ring, linking the story beats in such an easy, gentle manner that he seems to have written them in his sleep. He was only 23 when he penned the words, his youth evident in the narrator's naivety at the story's outset, but it's the contrast between said innocence and the closing verses already intoned that profoundly stands out. The disintegration of love, the scattering of its ashes, his inability to worthily communicate its heartbreak, adrift in loss and grief-stricken memory, in the end coming to terms with his sincere hope that she finds love and happiness elsewhere, reconciling both his wish to be emancipated from the agonies of the human condition and his growing knowledge that to be human is to forever be shackled to the highest highs and lowest lows, because that's life. And in Dylan's own words, "That's all right, Ma. It's life and life only." Ah, my friends from the prison, they ask unto me, how good does it feel to be free? And I answer them, most mysteriously, are birds free from the chains of the skyway? This was Ballad in Plain D by Bob Dylan. May he stay forever young. We bid thee give him a listen. Enjoy.
Well, I haven't planned this at all, but I just want to talk off the cuff. Like, man, how are you so good at pulling essays like that out of your ass? Like, that's a fucking talent. I couldn't do that. I couldn't write what you just did then in maybe an hour or two in a week. It would take me so long to come up with something like that. It's fucking lyrical in itself.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Now, I don't know. I really like Bob Dylan. And so it was easy to write about, I guess. I know a lot about him, and the artists you love, you almost become like students of them, you know. Mm. So you get acquainted with their conceits and their themes and the way they use language, if they're writers, for example, and in a lot of the cases in which we find favorite artists, they are writers. Yeah, and then you just use that love of them and try and put it into words.
Well, I guess. not just Bob Dylan, but like, you know, every essay that you've done so far in this podcast, what has it been, 3 or 4 of them? I think the listeners will agree that you're pretty damn good at it.
Well, let's hope they think that.
Have you always been interested in writing essays?
Yeah, I feel like I was brought up to think of them as like sort of argumentative stories. You have a point you want to make about a text or a view or, you know, maybe a historical point, you know, whatever it is, you have an opinion and then you want to express that opinion in an essay format, which is essentially the most cogent and persuasive way possible. So, you know, intro into body paragraphs, and each of them has a theme and a point that's driving the overall point towards fruition. And you want to be essentially convincing the reader or the listener of your argument to the point where it becomes irrefutable.
So there's a lot of analytical skills that come into play though. So for you to, you know, to listen to that song and to do a little bit of research into Bob Dylan and then come up with something so coherent like that in such a short amount of time, that's more so what I'm thinking about. Like that's a skill.
Thanks, man.
To just draw on all of that evidence and to funnel it into something that sounds like in its own right, like a piece of poetry or a story, like you said.
Oh, thanks, man. This is very impromptu.
It is impromptu.
Impromptu fingering Paddy's asshole. Of which I'm extremely grateful. it was really nice to write about, and I've been listening to him a lot lately, especially because his poetry is just so stark and seems like very simply written. Like, I really meant it when I said he seems to have written it in his sleep. Just the perfect word choices and nothing too overt. People try so hard to write a song, or they don't fucking try at all. This guy just, like, it's mind-boggling how well he puts across the human condition in simple language like that. Really evocative words, you know. Something to be inspired by.
Yeah. No, nice job, man.
Thanks, bro. Listen, give me a kiss.
No.
The Past by Patrick McCarthy. My shadow mirrors whatever I do. I see it there, stuck to my shoe, reminding me of what I've been through. My triumphs to celebrate. Grievous errors I have made. I try to live life day to day, but it has become so clear. For good or ill, the past is always here. It's in my actions and my voice. One can see it in my stance and poise. In its wake, I have no choice but to think of what I've done. All the victories hard won, the losses I wish to shun, the memories I hold so dear. For good or ill, the past is always here. I try to delve as deep as I can, the facets that make me a man, all the moments where instead I ran, rather than bravely deal with things. My young cowardice still stings. In my ear that pain still rings, all that darkness remains so near. For good or ill, the past is always here. But amidst all that, there's so much light. And of that fact I shan't lose sight. Say thanks before bed every night for all the pleasures sent my way. Cherished times brighten my day. With that strength I bid come what may and take it on without any fear. For good or ill, the past is always here. No point clouding what's done with hate, because you'll always have to carry that weight through every twist and turn of fate. For in the end, that's all we are. Precious collections of well-earned scars, each of us aiming for the stars, hoping to make our old selves cheer. For good or ill, the past is always here. Thanks.
Well, that was bittersweet, Patrick.
Thanks. That's exactly what I was going for.
Why'd you write that one?
I've been very much concerned with all the things I've done and all the experiences
I've
learned.
I would be concerned with the things you've done.
Well, yeah. And, you know, all the things, you know, the bits and pieces that have led me to this point and who I'm going to be as a man going forward. And I've just been concerned with that, not just as like a writing theme, but just in my day to day, you know, just trying to figure out what kind of person I want to be or what person I've become and how that stands, you know? So I figured I'd write something bittersweet about the past as like a concept and how, you know, it's always with you and it can be a curse and it can be a blessing and it can be all of those things, and it's irrevocable, and you are the accumulation of all your experiences, you know, all the things that you have done, all the things you are.
Maybe if one of those bad things hadn't happened, you wouldn't be here.
Exactly, yeah, all the good things, you know, like every single one is inextricable from the person I am, like who Patrick is, you know. So I just figured I wanted to convey that, I mean, as vaguely as possible, really. I mean, because, you know, there's only so much you can really write about. I was going to write about very specific instances or things I was regretting and things I was proud of, but I think the specifics didn't really matter. It's more like the sentiment. And, you know, we were talking about Bob Dylan earlier, and he does a lot of this, and I'm fairly certain I completely aped his rhyme scheme from Simple Twist of Fate, which is one of the best songs ever written. It's just a beautiful little short story.
Mm.
It was a lot more about, you know, corporeal events, like an actual story. This was just a bit more of a flight of fancy, you know, but yeah, it was fun to write.
Well, give me one thing other than the drunk driving incident that you regret.
Meeting you.
and
all of this. But not this whiskey. This is great.
It's a big improvement on the red label, man.
Oh,
holy
yeah,
shit.
Boy. Yeah, boy. But yeah, thanks for listening. Alright, so that was episode 5 of Spinning Yarns with Nick and Patty. A little bit somber, this one, hey?
It was.
Yeah.
Oh, we had a good laugh as well.
Good laugh, yeah, but I'm like surprisingly like fucking Devo. Nah, I actually feel really good, man. I just love talking about Bob Dylan. I love talking about myself and I love you praising me and stuff. It's wicked. No, I hope the listeners got something out of that, you know?
Yeah, I'm proud that we've made it to episode 5 already. Yeah, that's really exciting.
sort of steadily running out of stories and poems that we need to get writing so we have content.
Yeah, I want to pick up the amount of short stories that I'm writing anyway. It's because I'm sinking so much time into this novella, so like I haven't been pumping out the little stuff.
For all the listeners, Nick is writing a novella. Maybe we'll be able to read out a segment of it at some point.
Maybe. We'll see.
All right, well, yeah, thanks for listening. So we traditionally finish every episode with a quote, especially from a literary figure. I have one planned out.
I've got a quote for you.
Oh, you do?
Autobots, transform and roll out.
Fuck, dude.
Ha, 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 ha.